A discussion yesterday about one particular aspect of brachos, and I'd like to pick up on that theme and expand a little bit. We have a discussion that the Rishonim discuss, and that is, what happens when you have a bracha that does not find itself a source in the Gemara? Is that something that is worthy of our attention, or should we say, well, if it doesn't show up in the Gemara, it is not something that we should think about at all? And the reason why this is relevant is because the Medrash in our parsha, as we mentioned yesterday, brings down the source for the bracha of Baruch Shep Tarani Me'oncho Shelazeh, which is recited on the occasion of a bar mitzvah. So let's Me'akal El Hakaved, let's develop the theme, and then we'll see what it has to do with our parsha. The Rosh has a comment in Maseches Kiddushin, the very first parak. Lamatzanu, we do not find Shemavarchim Shum Chiyuv Bracha Shelo Huzkra B'Mishna O B'Tosefta O B'Gemara. Writes the Rosh, there is no such thing as a bracha that we recite which does not have a source in a Mishnah, in a Tosefta, or in a Gemara. Why is that? Ki acharei sidur Ravina v'Ravashi, because after Ravina and Ravashi put together, edited the Mishnayos and the Gemara, lamatzinu sheneschadish bracha, we do not find that any new bracha was instituted after that time. So once Chasimus HaTalmud came along, Ravina Ravashi edited the Gemara, they have it the way we have it, and after that time, no one has the right to add any new brachas. And I believe this comment of the Rosh is not one that is limited only to the area of brachos. It really expands to many other areas of halacha as well. One very simple example that we find the Achronim talk about. I think one of the most common questions that a shul rabbi gets bizmanenu is when we talk about the chumras, the tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid was an incredible tzaddik. He was a great chassid. That's why he's known not as a Hasidic Jew. He's known as a chassid, that he was a pious man. He was a very special person. Not that Hasidim are not pious, but Hasidic Jews today means something different. So Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid had many different chumras that he instituted, that he came up with. For example, not marrying a woman with the same name as your mother, and all these different things, and closing up when you're doing construction, never closing up a window or a doorway. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think Rabbanim nowadays get many, many shilas throughout the course of the year about the parameters of the tzavas Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, and how are people supposed to deal with that, and how perhaps they're not, how much attention should be given. It's a very important question. Obviously, the communities that are more Hasidish communities follow those minhagim and those chumras much more so than Ashkenazi communities. But here, we have the Achronim already discuss it. The Nadi Yehuda, for one, was an individual who took on some of the tzavas Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, and he said, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid lived way after the time of the Chasimus HaTalmud. And if the Chacham didn't find it necessary to institute this idea of making sure not to marry a woman with the same name, or making sure not to shut off the windows when you're doing construction, or all these different things, argues the Nadi Yehuda that Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid had a right to do it for himself and for his family, but we don't have to be bound by all the ideas that he came up with. They were not widely accepted in his time, and therefore perhaps after Chasimus HaTalmud, we don't make new takanas, we don't make new gzeiros. And that's famous also from Rabbi Chaim Velazhner. Rabbi Chaim Velazhner felt that we are not bound by all these new ideas that came up, as holy as the source is, as much as we're not taking away at all from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, but it doesn't mean that just because he instituted something for his family or for his community, it doesn't mean that it is binding, and it doesn't mean that it's something that future generations have to stick to. So this is a general question about how far do we go when we have something that comes along after the times of the Gemara. And the Rosh, as we mentioned, has the principle that a bracha that does not find itself a source in the times of the Gemara is not something that we have to worry about. If that is the case, the Pri Chadash asks a very simple question. You look through all of the Mishnayos and all of Chumash and all of Shas, and you will not find anywhere the bracha of Baruch Sha'amar. We start our davening every day, Psukah de Zimra, very important part of davening. The Gemara says you have to make sure, B'makom Rina, Shamtei Tefillah, before you daven every day, you have to make sure that you say Psukah de Zimra. So it's certainly very important, but we start off the bracha with Baruch Sha'amar, which is a bracha, Melech Mu'lal Batish Bachos, and yet you look through all of the Gemara Mishnayos and you do not find the text of that bracha. So the Pri Chadash on Shulchan Aruch is bothered. If the Rosh is in fact correct that we don't say brachos that do not have a source in Mishnayos or Gemara, why do we recite the bracha of Baruch Sha'amar? It doesn't have a source in the Mishnayos or the Gemara. So the Mishnah Berurah in his Bir Halacha addresses the issue, and he says no. This is a takana kaduma. Yes, maybe the Rosh is correct that the Rishonim didn't have a right or the Achronim didn't have a right to institute new brachas. But Baruch Sha'amar is not a new bracha. This is something that was around for generations, for centuries. And he writes, we already find this in the Zohar HaKadosh. So you're right, the Zohar HaKadosh is not the Gemara. But we already find it, that it was around in the times of the Tanoim, in the times of the Amoraim, and therefore he writes that there's no reason to assume that this is a controversial bracha. This is something that's bona fide, everyone accepted it. Baruch Shomer has been around for a long time. In fact, some Achronim say it was around even before then. Some Achronim say, the Chida writes like this, that it was around already from the times of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, which was before Rabbi Kiva, before Rabbi Shimon Yochai and the Zohar. Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol lived before them, and this is something that is very well founded, and it's not something that came along later on at all. Writes the Mishkan Es Yaakov, so why isn't it in the Gemara? If it's such an important bracha, if Baruch Shamar really comes from the Zohar HaKadosh and from perhaps Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, how come it's not in the Gemara? Writes the Mishkan Es Yaakov, very simple. The Gemara is not a sitter. The Gemara was not meant to be a sitter. So there were many tefillos that were said in the times of the Tanoim and the Amoraim, and they felt no need to put them all verbatim into the sitter, into the Gemara. The Gemara is the Gemara. The sitter is the sitter. So they had a sitter in their times, and they had the Gemara in their times. And therefore he says there is no indication, just because it doesn't find itself on a particular page in the Gemara, doesn't mean that it wasn't around already from before. And that's why Baruch Shamar is something that we have the practice to recite, because it is a very well-founded bracha. One of the other very questionable brachas that we say every day is the last bracha of the Birchas HaShachar, Hanosein LaYoev Koach. And once again, here in Shulchan Aruch, we find a major discrepancy as to whether or not that bracha should be recited. So, Shulchan Aruch writes in Simen Memvav in Arachayim, Yesh Nagim Levarech Hanosein LaYoev Koach. Some have the practice to say Hanosein LaYoev Koach, Ve'ein Divrei Amnirim, writes the Mechaber, I think it's incorrect. This bracha should not be recited. And the Rama picks up on that and he says, well, we know that Kehilos Ashkenaz, Ashkenazic communities have the practice, that we do recite this bracha Hanosein LaYoev Koach. What's the controversy all about? Where does it come from? The answer is, once again, you look through the Gemara in the end of Maseches Brachos, it has all the Birchos HaShachar, and nowhere does it mention this bracha Hanosein LaYoev Koach. So this is a very questionable issue. What do we do about that last bracha? My father told me that Rav Soloveitchik had the practice not to say the last bracha Hanosein LaYoev Koach, because he thought that the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam were correct, that since it's a bracha that does not find itself in the times of the Gemara, it's something that should be left out. Now, even in terms of the Svardim, here's where it gets very interesting. The Mechaber himself writes not to say the bracha. And Ashkenazim follow the Psak of the Ramah, generally, that we do recite the bracha. My father always told me that he's careful to try to satisfy both opinions. He always is Yotze the bracha, Hanosein LaYoev Koach, with someone else. This way, Shomei HaKohen, it's as if you said it on your own, the same way Kiddush Friday night and Hamotzi Friday night, we all do that, Shomei HaKohen. So he listens to someone else and he answers Amen. And this way he doesn't have to worry about the Bracha Levatela being his own problem. Let someone else make the Bracha Levatela. So that's the way of satisfying both opinions. But most of us are not going to be doing that. Most of us, either if we're Ashkenazim, we follow the practice of the Ramah and we say the Bracha. If we're Svardim, we follow the practice of the Mechaber and we do not say the Bracha. But here is where it gets a little bit sticky, because the Beis Yosef writes that his opinion is he doesn't think the bracha should be recited because it doesn't find itself a source in Chazal, in the Mishnayos. However, it comes along later on where there was a major question as to whether or not the Beis Yosef changed his mind. Now that's always a very problematic issue. When someone comes along later and says, no, the psak that was given, they changed their mind about. Like now, I'm learning with the women here in the morning, on Tuesday mornings, Hilchos Shabbos. So we were discussing recently, we didn't get into the whole issue, but there was a major discussion about baby wipes on Shabbos. It's been a discussion ever since baby wipes came along. Is it a malach of schita? Is it a problem or not? Many different opinions. It's a big issue. So there were those who argued that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, even though he writes in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, that Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa was written by his closest Talmud, by Rav Neuvert, and every word in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa is, you could take it to the bank that Rav Shlomo Zalman said that. He was with Rav Shlomo Zalman all the time. So Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa that he felt it was not a malach of schita, it's not a problem, for whatever reason. There were those who came along later on, the Archa Shabbos, which is a very contemporary sefer of Rabbi Reuben, who lives today, great Talmud Chacham on his own right. He argued, no, he heard that Reb Shlomo Zalman was choser. He heard that Reb Shlomo Zalman changed his mind later on in life, and he decided that he no longer is lenient about using the baby wipes, and one has to be machmir. So that's a big question. What do we do? On the books, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes that there's nothing wrong. Now you have people coming along and saying, very reputable people coming along and saying, not that he heard it on his own, but he heard from someone else, that that's what Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said, he changed his mind. So that's a question. What do we do with that? Is that true that he changed his mind? Is it not true? I know when I discussed this with Rav Asher Weiss, and then he subsequently printed it, he said, look, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman was a man who took responsibility. A responsible person, if they change their mind, and they know that everybody's reading what they have to say, will write once again a retraction. They're not just going to leave it for people to decide whether they heard this or they heard that, whether 50 years ago they saw what he wrote in print and 50 years later they heard him retract. A responsible person, if he really changed his mind, would have written somewhere that he changed his mind. From the fact that he didn't write that, seems to be an indication that maybe he didn't. So here again we find that issue. And I think there's merit to both sides. I don't know exactly what the answer is, and really you have to know the personality who's being brought to question. Were they the kind of person that would have retracted or not? So here they write about the Beis Yosef that are not so clear. And they think the Beis Yosef later on in his life, even though in Shulchan Aruch and in the Beis Yosef he writes that Svardim should not say Anosin Le'ayev Koach, here they write, no, the Beis Yosef changed his mind. Why did he change his mind? Because he found out that the Arizal was of the opinion that this is a very important bracha and it must be recited, and therefore the Beis Yosef said, but l'dayti, I am mevatel myself to the Arizal, and therefore I'm changing my psak. And in fact, the Achronim write, had the Beis Yosef known about the Arizal's opinion at the time that he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he never would have written the way he wrote it. So that's a major question. Is that really true? Do we assume that the Beis Yosef changed his mind later? So this became a major, major disagreement amongst the Sfardim. Should we assume the Beis Yosef should be taken literally the way he writes in Shulchan Aruch? Or should we assume that, Mipia Shmua, they say, that the Beis Yosef later on in his life changed his mind? So what do we do with that? It's a big issue. Rabbi Avadi Yosef weighs in on the issue and he says, number one, he doesn't believe that the Beis Yosef, if he changed his mind, wouldn't have written it somewhere. If he really changed his mind about something like this, he would have written it. There would be documentation that he changed his mind. And number two, he says, it doesn't make sense to argue that the Beis Yosef would have changed his mind just because he heard that the Arizal felt it was important. He says, the Arizal, lo b'shamayim hi. The Arizal was like a malach. He lived in Shamayim. He was living in his own stratosphere. And his Torah is a great Torah, and it's very important, but that's not what governs the Shulchan Aruch. That's not what governs the Beis Yosef's Pesukim. And as much as the Arizal was a great Mekubal, and a great Tzaddik, and a great Talmud Chacham, that is not the way the Shulchan Aruch decided how to come upon the final issue on a given Pesach. And therefore he writes, he has no reason to believe that the Beis Yosef would have changed his mind simply because he heard later on in life that the Arizal was in disagreement with him. So what? So the Arizal disagreed, but the Halacha is the Halacha. So that is a major issue. Rabbi Avadi has a tshuva where he backtracks again and he says maybe it is true, maybe it's not true. He goes in a few tshuvas in a row where he discusses the issue, the merits about whether or not we should accept such a shmua that the Beis Yosef changed his mind. I think it's a very interesting issue regardless. The final bracha that I'd like to talk about, now that it's right before Mincha, is something that really you don't find the source for, not in the Gemara, not in the Mishnayos, not in the Yerushalmi, not even in the Rishonim, not in the Rif, not in the Rush, not in the Rambam. You really don't find it anywhere. And that is the bracha that comes from our parsha. The Medrash writes, Yaakov and Esav become adults, vayigdilu ha-ne'arim, and the Medrash says, Vayhi Esav ish yodei atzayid. The pasuk tells us Esav goes his way, Yaakov goes his way. Says the Medrash, when they were young children, you weren't able to tell what was going on with them. It wasn't clear that Yaakov was Yaakov and Esav was Esav. But then, once they became adults, each one went their own way. And Rashi quotes on Chumash that Yaakov went to the Beis Medrash, Esav went to the Beis Avodah Zarah, or he went hunting, whatever he was doing. Says the Medrash, from here we learn that once a child becomes an adult, once a child becomes a bar mitzvah, the parents have to say, Baruch Sheh Patrani Me'onsho Shel Zeh. This is the only source we have for this, and as we mentioned, it doesn't show up in the Rambam or the other Rishonim, and certainly not in the Gemara. So we just have a Medrash on our Parsha, which seems to teach us, a Medrash Halacha, seems to teach us a Halacha, but we don't find it trickling down anywhere else. And this is a major question, how do we deal with this issue? So the Ramah quotes this Lahalacha, and the Ramah says, we have the practice to say this Bracha Baruch Sheh Patrani. But at the end of the day, he says, I'm not really sure what to do with it, because after all, we don't really have a source in the Talmud for it. We just have a nice story in the Medrash that tells about Yaakov and Esav, and mentions this just by the wayside. So what do we do? Writes the Ramah, therefore, we should say the bracha without Shema Malchus. This is why we have the opinion, generally we've adopted the opinion, that we say, Baruch Sheh Patrani Me'on Sheh Shel Zeh. This we have nothing to lose. So you're saying a bracha without Hashem's name. If it's the right thing to do, so you did the right thing. If it's the wrong thing to do, you didn't lose anything. You didn't say Hashem's name. There was no problem of a bracha levatela. That's generally the psak of the Rama. The Vilna Gaon disagreed, and the Vilna Gaon felt, no, this bracha shows up in the Medrash. That means it's a very old bracha, and therefore it should be recited with Shema Malchus like any other bracha would be recited. And this is, once again, another one of those cases where you have a major discrepancy as to what to do, and depending on where you live, depending on the customs that they follow, whether or not you will say the bracha with the Shema Malchus, or perhaps you will not. I found a very surprising comment by Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, where he davened in the Grashul in Shari Chesed. That was the shul he davened in all the time. I would imagine he followed the minhagim of the Vilna Gaon, because it was, after all, instituted after the Vilna Gaon's Talmidim, who were the ones who established the Yishuv in Yerushalayim many years ago in the 1800s. So the Reb Shlomo Zalman writes that it depends. If a parent is confident that they did an amazing job being mechanech the child, so then go ahead, make the bracha b'shem u'malchus. But for most of us who are not so confident by the bar mitzvah, and we don't know that we've done everything correctly, so then maybe there's what to be concerned about. How can you say, Baruch Shepatrani, now you're on your own. I was mechanech you, now you're on your own, and you can go out into the world, and you'll be successful, and you'll be a good Jew. I don't know that every parent can say that with such certainty, writes Reb Shlomo Zalman, and therefore he says, in his opinion, that's the case where a father should make the bracha without shame and malchus. I did see a couple of years ago that Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Swede H, has an article about a speech that he gave upon the occasion of someone in his community who made a bar mitzvah. And he writes there that as much as the practice has been for centuries that we recite the bracha of Baruch Shepatrani, and it's a very beautiful custom, and it's a great minhag, and we find it all over the world, and some say with a bracha, some without. However, he writes, the nature of this bracha has certainly changed. He says it used to be, writes the Sridei Eish, it used to be, that when we were living in a shtetl, and we were able to be confident that the chinuch that we invested in our children was going to pay off, and we knew that they were going to turn out, for the most part, to be comfortable and living in our community, and everything was going to be okay, they were going to marry a girl from the community, they were going to raise their children here. So he says, then a father at 13 years old was able to say, Baruch Shepatrani, I gave you all the tools to be successful, to be a contributing member of our community, our society, and now it's up to you. Now you're going out to work, now you're going to go and get married at Bar Mitzvah, and whatever's going to be is going to be, it will be okay. However, he writes, today, where the whole nature of our chinuch system has changed, we don't do like we used to do. We don't kick the kid out of the house at 13 years old. The parent is still expected to be involved way past that zman, therefore writes the Sfidei Eish, is what to think about. When you make the bracha, Baruch Shepatrani, upon the bar mitzvah, it's not so simple that you're saying the same thing that you used to say back in the days when we had a small village and you were more confident in the chinuch that you gave to your children. He says, a parent should never feel that just because they say Baruch Shepatrani, that means they are now absolved of their obligation of chinuch. Nowadays, our obligation of chinuch obviously goes way above and beyond what it ever used to mean because of the challenges that our children are facing and because of all of the unknowns that our children are about to be faced with as they go out into the bigger world.